From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm David Folkenflik, and this is the new On Point. It's safe to say that President Trump is not following the political norms and traditions generally embraced by his predecessors. He's stripped away a lot of decorum, trampled a lot of traditions. Let's just say he's doing things differently. Here he is on the campaign trail.
We are going to drain the swamp in Washington, D.C. We're draining the swamp.
Draining the swamp? In Washington, people say he's shredding norms, busting norms. Today, we're talking norms, how they evolved, what purpose they serve, and why we heed them, and how they may, at times, interfere with making needed changes in Washington and other parts of life. This hour, we'll call upon the expertise of a terrific batch of people who have thought hard about norms, among them, two guys named Norm. This hour, On Point, President Trump and norm busting. You can join us on air or online. What's your take on President Trump's lack of respect for traditional norms? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from St. Louis, Missouri, is Judy McLean Parks. She's a professor of organizational behavior at Washington University's Olin Business School. Judy, welcome.
Hi, David.
So that's a norm right there. I welcomed you. You greeted me back. There we are, all politesse, all very nice. What purpose do norms serve in everyday life, whether at home or at work?
Well, I think they give us predictability, which, of course, makes us feel better. We don't like surprises, particularly negative surprises. Mm-hmm. But norms, I think it's important to understand, really developed at some point because of a perceived survival need, if you will. And that means that they tend to be rather important to us. They tend to be sticky. We kind of don't even know they're there. It's just this is the way things have always been done, so this must be the right way to do things. And they kind of inform us about what we think is appropriate or inappropriate.
So they do that. So at the workplace, define a couple of things that people may not even think about that are useful norms.
Okay, so if you workplace as well as just life in general, for example, there was one study that they did once when they asked people to respond to a questionnaire, and they either put a typewritten note on top of it, please answer this, and put it in their mail file, or they put a sticky note on it with what appeared to be a handwritten note, same information as the typewritten one, but they got much higher response rate when they did the sticky note. In other words, it was personal, and when something is personal, I'm more likely to take it seriously and not just discard it. There are other norms, such as we tip people even when it isn't quote-unquote economically rational, the proverbial truck stop that you're never going to see that server again. Mm-hmm. So why would you want to leave them a tip?
But and so why do people do it?
Because we're supposed to.
And
we
so
don't
what
know
is,
why
what is,
we're supposed to, but we are.
So what is the adherence to it? What is the stickiness of the practice? Is it an echo of what parents and grandparents did in years past? Is there something useful that's accomplished by doing it, even if you're never going to see those people again, and therefore you're not going to personally derive any benefit from it?
Well, I think you can derive benefit by thinking I'm being fair, I'm helping somebody out who may be making minimum wage or less because their tip could be considered as part of that. But I think that one of the things about norms is frequently we don't even have to think about them. They've been handed down. I think an example, although it wouldn't be a social norm per se, except maybe perhaps in a particular family, but if your parent's hand tightens on your arm when you walk by a dog, you grow up with a fear of dogs, kind of thing. It may be something that is so subtle that you're not really realizing it's being communicated to you. And all of these things did originally develop for survival reasons and are kind of the building blocks of our cultures. Our cultures vary. Some cultures are collectivist, some cultures are individualistic, but that's because that was what was necessary for survival in the areas in which we emerged.
Now, I'm going to apologize to you. I slightly mispronounced your name on your introduction. I'm told by our Cracker Jack team that your name is pronounced Judy McLean Parks. I said McLean. Apologies for the first round. So there you go. I genuinely am sorry. Sometimes people apologize, even if they don't like or respect the person they're apologizing to make things work in the workplace or think that they make things work in the workplace. Why do we do that?
Well, I think it kind of lubricates the social process, makes things, and it also creates a sense of reciprocity. In fact, reciprocity is probably one of the most important norms that social animals have, and I do say social animals because we see it in crows, et cetera, as well. Whereas if I give you something, you will reciprocate, if not immediately, but potentially sometime in the future. Reciprocity has different forms. Positive reciprocity is where I give you something or do something for you, it's valued, and you think you have to give back to me or we're not in balance. Mm-hmm. Negative reciprocity is getting even, and that's also a social norm where I shouldn't let you get away with something. And so the norm of reciprocity is one of those that really is essential for social life and is one of those that there is some small evidence could be hardwired.
I want you just to give me 1 minute on when do norms interfere with something that's valuable, progress, insight, innovation?
Well, I think sometimes we become so entrenched and calcified, if you will, in our norms that they might easily get in the way. You can think in organizations, though, that might have norms where they really look at outcomes. So did you produce 500 widgets? But they don't really stop and think about the process by which those outcomes are achieved. And then we have a dysfunctional process because maybe people are cheating, maybe they're cooking the books. Those types of things just in order to meet that outcome request. So I think that that's a component of it as well.
That you've been hearing Judy McLean Parks. She's professor of organizational behavior at Washington University's Olin Business School. Judy, thanks for tolerating me. Thanks for joining us and enlightening us today.
Thank you.
With me now to talk Washington norms and President Trump are quite literally two norms. In living, breathing person, they are Norm Ornstein. He joins us from Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. Nice work if you can get it. He's a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and a contributing editor and columnist for the National Journal and The Atlantic. Norm Ornstein, great to have you here today.
Great to be with you, David.
And with me from Washington, D.C. is Norman Eisen. He's a senior fellow at Brookings, a former ethics official during the Obama administration and chair of the government watchdog group CREW. Norman, pleasure to talk with you both today.
Nice to be here.
So we've got a few minutes before the break of this first segment. What's the deal with norms? Why should we care, Norm Eisen, about the fact that this was a president who promised to drain the swamp, change the way business is done in Washington, and certainly at least tonally in terms of behavior, demeanor, and speech seems to be doing just that?
Well, David, thanks for having me. And as he's called in Washington circles, Norm the Elder. We have often joked, the two of us, about starting a rock band, The Ethical Norms. So you've got us here now. And the reason that we should care about Trump's transgression, his brutal violation of norms, is because they're in a bucket of things that matter to us as humans, whether you call them norms, ethics, values, or laws, because these are the underlying concerns that drive our Constitution, our law, our regulation. We want people to do the right thing, and that's where drain the swamp comes from. It's a desire, one that Norm Ornstein and I share and have devoted our careers to make Washington function better so it serves the people. Instead, Trump has broken it. He's turned it into unconstitutional crony capitalism benefiting himself and those around him. He's abused the First Amendment and other normative values that we hold as Americans by his attacks on the press, assaults on the individual people of color, minorities and others who he marginalizes, and on everything we care about has been transgressed by him, and he hasn't drained the swamp. He's filled it with the toxic sludge of corruption and alligators.
Strong words and imagery indeed. Norm Ornstein, talk to me a little bit. You know, we can get into how this affects policy as the hour goes along, but briefly talk to me a little bit about the decorum that he's broken, the folkways that he's violated. Why do these things matter? And we can, you know, pick maybe one to illustrate what you mean.
Sure. It's important also to note that lots of people, including lots of powerful people, can violate norms. It's different when it's a president. One of the norms that we've had is that while we have three branches of government, and this is a norm that's changed, especially since the Cold War, the president has a particular place in American society. What the president does, how the president behaves, sets standards for others. One of our norms is that once you get elected president, things are different. You represent all the people. Donald Trump hasn't represented all the people. He's represented his base. The first thing he did after getting elected was to hold a political rally leading cries of lock her up. There's another norm. In a democratic society, small d, you don't try to lock up your political opponents. When you use a kind of rhetoric that divides people rather than unites them, including racist and nativist rhetoric, that basically unleashes people to do things that otherwise would be viewed as absolutely improper. When we have, as we just saw, an individual call up the Boston Globe and threaten to kill everybody there because you are the enemy of the people.
Criminal charges, just so that listeners know, criminal charges were just unveiled this week.
And clearly
on that
very a dangerous
cause.
Individual, maybe a deranged individual, but using rhetoric that the president used that we would have seen as beyond the pale, as violating fundamental norms. And it's important to remember here, too, that these aren't just American norms. Joseph Stalin originated the term enemy of the people and used it to kill millions of people. When Khrushchev became the head of the Soviet Union, he banned its use because he said it was too dangerous.
So Norm Ornstein, these are words with not only norm busting, but norm busting because they break with a lot of tradition. You know, we'll be getting at after the break the question of, okay, if Trump is guilty as charged, so what? As one conservative scholar recently wrote, all norms are not created equal. Norms themselves are neither good nor bad. We are discussing President Trump and presidential norms. We'd like our two norms, Norman Eisen and Norm Ornstein, to stick around, and we'll have more join us as well. We hope you'll join us. When is it okay to break long-held norms? When is it not? I'm David Folkenflik, and this is the new On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik, NPR's media correspondent. We're talking about Trump and his behavior as president. You can join the conversation. What past president's behavior do you point to as a good example? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to ignore some norms today, too. By that, I mean former Saturday Night Live anchor Norm MacDonald, former L.A. Lakers point guard Norm Nixon, and the new L.A. Times executive editor Norm Perlstein. Instead, we will observe and hear from these norms. Norm Ornstein is at the American Enterprise Institute. He's co-author of One Nation After Trump, A Guide for the Perplexed, the Disillusioned, the Desperate, and the Not Yet Deported. I'm also joined by Norm Eisen. He's at the Brookings Institution, but he's also chair of the government watchdog group CREW. And I think meaningfully, it's worth pointing out, he was in the Obama administration from 2009 to 2011 as special counsel and special assistant to the president for ethics, and was a U.S. ambassador to the Czech Republic. Subsequently, his new book comes out this very week, The Last Palace, Europe's Turbulent Century in Five Lives and One Legendary House. No norms broken, I hope, there. First, I wanted to play a couple of clips of President Trump to illustrate some of the kinds of things we're talking about. For example, President Trump has still not released his tax returns. That's customary for presidential nominees. It's certainly customary for presidents. Hasn't happened. Here's Trump's response back in the month of his inauguration, January 2017, when asked about a reporter about his returns.
The only one that cares about my tax returns are the reporters. Okay, they're the only ones. But no, I don't think so. I won. I mean, I became president. No, I don't think they care at all. I don't think they care at all. I think you care. I think you care. First of all, you learn very little from a tax return. What you should do is go down to federal elections and take a look at the numbers.
That's something perhaps somewhat substantive that's a norm that the president has cast aside. Here's a tonal version, a rhetorical version, slightly rough language. I want to warn listeners. This past spring in Pennsylvania, the president laid into NBC's Meet the Press moderator Chuck Todd. And here's what he's had to say and how he had to say it.
It's 1999. I'm on Meet the Press, a show now headed by Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd. He's a sleeping son of a bitch, I'll tell you.
Quite some language. We've got a call from Derry, New Hampshire, from a caller. Fred, thanks for listening. What do you make of all this?
Thank you. I voted for Trump because he says what I think, and that's my norm. But I listen to me change from a pro-Trump high school dropout to a Trump-deterring individual with a master's degree. I did this little switch to point out briefly, sorry about the bird, some norms. That
so just to be clear, Fred, hold on. Just to be clear, bird aside, you're not supporting President Trump. You are getting through the line, deceiving us a little bit. Why the deceit?
Because exactly pointing out that NPR puts people who are pro-Trump to the top of the queue. Another problem is journalistically, I mean, this show can be an exception a bit, but journalistically, to take the other side on something where there's falsehoods, there isn't another side. Also, not calling truth to power, even to your powerless Freds like I imitated, because by not addressing that bit by bit.
All right, so out of curiosity, Fred.
That allows. It's glad you called. You know, it's like, what?
Fred, I'm glad that you called. You would have been able to get it in the air one way or the other. We try to make sure a broad array of things here. And I tell you, I do not think it is a partisan or ideological position to stand for a truth and verified fact and transparency in government. We try to do that every day as journalists and as broadcasters. Fred trying to shake things up himself, posing as a supporter of President Trump to indicate he feels that public radio, I guess NPR, tries to oversample with Trump supporters. But there are a lot of people who like what they're hearing out there. Let's talk a little bit to Norm Ornstein, who's written a bit about this with a couple of his colleagues today. But I want to read back some a writing of Charles Kessler. He's a senior fellow at the Claremont Institute, a professor of government at Claremont McKenna College. And one of the things he wrote in a piece earlier this week in the New York Times was that the idea of breaking norms can renew democracy rather than ruin it. He said, guilty as charged, the president may be, but so what? All norms are not created equal. Hence, breaking norms is neither good nor bad, except as the norms themselves are good or bad. We elect presidents partly to separate the wheat from the chaff, to energize government by shedding or retiring norms that no longer serve the public good, and by adopting fresh ones that do. You know, I can think it's not, you know, in the history of Washington, D.C., it used to be the norm, at least from the days of Woodrow Wilson on, that Washington, D.C. was racially segregated. It used to be that women wouldn't have their own bathrooms off the United States Senate, even if they were United States senators. Why are norms valuable in and of themselves? And what are you seeing today that makes the way in which the president is perhaps ignoring them, to your mind, problematic?
So we actually, my co-authors, E.J. Dionne and Tom Mann, and I have a piece in the Washington Post Outlook section this Sunday that deals directly with what Charles Kessler wrote, and also a critique from the left by Jedediah Purdy, a Duke law professor, who basically said that breaking norms is a core part of democracy, and they both have a point. Certainly, we've had norms in the past that African Americans were inferior, that women were their place was in the home, many, many others, the norms that needed to be broken. Presidents can play a positive role in that sense. What Kessler says is that the norms that Trump is breaking are basically ones that are anathema to liberals, that it's good that he's doing that. And I think that ignores another important part of reality. One of the reasons why we were able to get equal voting rights, for example, for minorities, was that we had norms of free speech, of a kind of action, the way in which we pursue the regular order in Congress, that enabled it to happen. And the norms that Trump is breaking And that includes fake news, and that truth is not anything other than what I say it is. The way in which he divides people by race, the norm that you treat children with some care that we've seen with the family separation, the norms that have been broken by not just Trump himself, but throughout his administration with ICE and with the inhumane ways in which they've treated immigrants, and now taking citizens because they're brown and saying they can't have passports because their records are not valid. Those are all norms that basically are a part of civil society in a democracy. The kinds of norms that were broken in the former Yugoslavia, for example, that led to a kind of warfare that is a dangerous phenomenon. Alternative Facts by Kellyanne Conway. All of those things are not norms that you can look on as being broken with approval. They have nothing to do with liberals versus conservatives. They have to do with decency versus indecency.
We're getting a note from a listener online, goes under the handle Bill GKD. He writes, remember when Obama saluted a soldier while holding a cup of coffee? And that was just terrible, according to some. Remember when that was one of the biggest things that people could moan about when it came to norms or protocol? I remember Obama being sort of half jokingly, half not slammed for wearing a tan suit. I had a tan suit at the time and liked it very much. Why don't we go now to Cambridge, Massachusetts? We have Steve calling. Steve, what are your thoughts?
David, this word norms, which I'm hearing all the time everywhere, has kind of slipped into the language. I think it's kind of been put there by liberal rhetoric, and I think basically it means if you disapprove of something or you disagree with something, you just throw this word in there rather than constitutional rights and laws.
So you just call it a norm, and therefore it can't be criticized.
Right. You say it's breaking a norm, and I don't know what it is. It's like when people call something un-American. It doesn't tell me a lot about the policy. It just tells me that for some reason you're looking down your nose at it. And I think one of the reasons that Trump got elected is because I think many, many Americans feel that academia, the press, Hollywood, and these fabulously wealthy leftist foundations have just kind of created a hegemony. And the if you disagree with that, again, you're not following norms. You're inappropriate. And we usually have to hear all of these, like your guests today, rather than discuss these policies, which they may disagree with, and I think there are many reasons people can disagree with policies, they fall back on this, oh, they're about brown people, they're about dividing race. All of these words that are more epithets than really thoughtful characterizations of a disagreement.
All right. Well, Steve, thank you very much for your call. I want to be fair to these norms, that is Norman Eisen and Norm Ornstein, I'm asking them about norms rather than asking them to plumb the depths of the policies here. That's a little bit how we framed the hour. But there are substantive issues that are packed behind this. Let's go to a clip of the president. He was speaking in July with Fox News' Tucker Carlson, and he appeared to question the commitment of the United States to NATO's common defense doctrine. It's called Article 5, and it states that all NATO countries will defend each other. The first voice you'll hear belongs to Tucker Carlson.
Why should my son go to Montenegro to defend it from attack?
Why is that? I understand what you're saying. I've asked the same question. You know, Montenegro is a tiny country with very strong people.
Yeah, I'm not against Montenegro or Albania.
No, by the way, they're very strong people. They're very aggressive people. They may get aggressive, and congratulations, you're in World War III.
In an interview with Bloomberg News yesterday, Trump strongly suggested that he might seek to pull the United States out of the World Trade Organization, which is sort of a multinational outfit created to peacefully resolve trade disputes and to do it without contention among various trading partners. Norman Eisen, you have served not only in your current role as a watchdog and previously as an ethics czar in the Obama administration, but you served as an ambassador to the Czech Republic, if memory serves. What does it do when a president questions Article 5 of NATO, the common defense? What does it do when he suggests you might, you know, hey, if we don't start getting better decisions, folks, we might pull out of WTO? What does that do? Does it really matter fundamentally?
Well, there were a number of normative violations in that clip that you just played.
So walk me
David.
Through them.
I'll start with the norm of respect and friendship for our allies. Article 5 has only been invoked once in the history of NATO, when the United States was attacked on 9/11. And our Montenegrin and other allies have poured their blood onto soil across the world to fight the battle against terror in the years since, including the loss of many lives of NATO allies in Afghanistan. So So there's a norm of respect and decency and reciprocity that's been violated that makes us less safe. And there's another norm that struck me, the contempt dripping from Trump's voice as he didn't even pretend to exhibit a sense of decency towards our allies. That politeness sometimes saves you from making the kind of factual and moral errors that he committed in that clip. So those are the – I could go on longer, but those are two of the principal violations in that sound.
I want to take a call now from Centerville, Louisiana. Kim, you're on the air. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Hi, David.
Hiya.
I just have a brief comment. I think that – and I agree with the speaker that you were speaking, Ms. The second norm, I agree with him, and also the writings of Mr. Kessler, that if norms of the past were discriminatory or unfair, of course they should be trampled on and changed. But there's also a presidential norm. I think we have an expectation for our leader to be decent, to be civil, and I think that there's a norm that he's not trampling on, and that is, there's a norm that he is trampling on, and that is accountability. That's all that's my comment for today.
Well, thank you so much for that, Kim. There's a gentleman, tweeting at me this morning, a gentleman by the name of Joseph Blumenfeld. He says, the norms have it all wrong. This is base-level behavioral stuff. NPR and his audience are on one end of the do-good spectrum, didn't vote for Trump, are horrified by what's happening. I might disagree given some of the calls we have had and will have, but nonetheless, he says, as long as do-gooders outnumber don't-dos, we'll be okay. Norm Ornstein, what do you think? Is this just, a question of a lot of tweets and a lot of angst for cable news producers to make hay out of, or does this fundamentally reroute the ship of state in any way?
One of the things we should talk about a little bit, David, is that it's not just about Donald Trump. Excuse me. Trump didn't start a lot of these things. In fact, we had norms changed in Congress. Newt Gingrich, when he came in, who really created a kind of tribalism that changed our norms from those on the other side of the aisle are our adversaries. They may differ with us, but they're worthy people and we can work with them, to they're the enemy and we can't work with them. We've had a norm that Congress acts as an independent check on the president, whether they're of the same party or not. And this Congress has completely blown up that norm. It's blown up the norm of how we deal with nominations made by a president for the Supreme Court or for other courts, and that's altered the balance. Once you have a president who changes norms, it may be hard to get them back. And just because you have people who view it in a different way, who outnumber those who don't, the nature of our political system can mean that those who are not in the majority can have a lot of sway. I should say, about the corruption in not just the president's behavior and his family,
but those of other members of his administration, with almost no hearings, no checks on people enriching themselves, the Commerce Secretary, for example.
And that is that there's no law requiring Congress to be a check and balance. And at the same time, there is that constitutional expectation. And in fact, it having been set up to do just that.
Exactly so. And those are norms of behavior. And some of them in Congress we call, and it's sort of a catch-all, the regular order that's been completely abandoned. We have a norm that's almost built into our political system that you have to debate, deliberate, and then compromise.
And you're not seeing that happen.
From a parliamentary system, and that's not happening.
You're not seeing that happen either. Norm Ornstein, Norman Eisen, please stick around. To all of you listening, please hold on as well. We're discussing President Trump's adherence, or often trampling, of Washington's political norms. We'd like you to join the conversations. What norms do you think should be swept away? What progress or advances do you think are inhibited when they stick around? I'm David Folkenflik. This is The New On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
I'm Linda Holmes. There's more stuff to watch these days than you can ever get to. That's why we make Pop Culture Happy Hour. Twice a week, we give you the lowdown on what's worth your time and what's not. Find Pop Culture Happy Hour on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. We're talking about President Trump and so-called expected norms in Washington, D.C. And now there's also the expectation that President Trump will cast them aside. You can join our conversation. That's your expectation, and we'll fulfill it. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With us are two people who thought hard about our political system, our political ways of life. That's Norm Ornstein of the Center-Right American Enterprise Institute, and Norm Eisen. He's chairman of the liberal watchdog group CREW. He's also was an Obama ethics official and was an ambassador to the Czech Republic subsequently. Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Bree Payton. She's a staff writer at The Federalist. She frequently appears as a commentator at cable news and has written for such publications as The Wall Street Journal and The New York Times opinion section. Bree, welcome to On Point.
Thanks so much for having me.
What do you make of all this? When you hear there being a lot of angst and a lot of chatter, shows devoted to the question of the president casting aside norms, how does that register with you?
Sure. So I think that, you know, here we are almost 2 years into Donald Trump's presidency, and yet the republic is still intact and the economy is doing great. You know, obviously, there are a number of expectations that a lot of people have when it comes to a president, and the fact that he is defying those expectations or not following norms, and yet our republic is still intact and things are still fine, I think indicates a lot. And I think the fact that a lot of members of the media are still acting completely hysterical every single day, 2 years into the presidency, about every single tweet. I mean, the meter is cranked up to level 11 all the time. I don't know how a lot of people, you know, are able to sustain that level of energy. I think says a lot about kind of the discrepancy when it comes to reality, if that makes sense. And I think that there are a number of norms that Donald Trump has just completely shattered that I've been happy about.
Well, let's break a couple of those down. Give me two or three instances where you're like, hey, dude, this is great. No more of that. You know what? That was just a stuffy way Washington used to operate, and it doesn't make any sense.
Sure. So I appreciate the fact that he is questioning the progressive modus operandi that our country has been operating on and accelerating towards over the past 100 years since probably the Wilson administration. This idea that you know, we're going to build an administrative state and we're going to make all these agencies and fill them with experts. And every single, we have designated agencies filled with a team of experts that are going to handle each specific problem. I think that questioning that idea and pushing for civil service reform, which Donald Trump has, and I think appointing different directors to different agencies who understand that their agency is a joke or something whose power should be significantly scaled back. And I'm thinking specifically of the EPA and also the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, right? I mean, appointing someone who's openly skeptical about his own agency. Yeah, I think, I'm talking about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau specifically, right? Like appointing someone who has just openly said, there's too much power that we have. We have too much authority in this and that it's unilateral, I think is a good step in the right direction. So I've appreciated that Donald Trump has just been taking a sledgehammer to the administrative state, and I hope that he continues to do that.
A sledgehammer to the administrative state as a both a violation of norms, but also as perhaps substantive policy deeply changing the way in which that'll work. I want to take a call and have you react to it, Bree, from a gentleman named Jim. He's calling from Florence, South Carolina. Jim, go ahead.
Yes. Hello, David. First of all, you know, just listening with her, I've amended what I was going to say to you right off the bat, but one of the things that she touched on and stated was that, you know, the Republic is still standing and things are fine and the economy's great. Well, I would take issue with that. I think somewhere she needs to possibly go around the country and talk to people in different areas. I'm not sure where she's from or what she does, but.
Well, Jim, let me quickly ask you, Jim, who did you support in this election and how do you feel about it subsequently?
It does concern the president. Now, I voted for him. I really did. And
Mr. Trump.
I thought we needed a change, and I thought that we would get a change, but we haven't. One of the things I am is a civil person. I believe in civility. And he is anything but that. His behavior, the way he addresses people, the way he talks, he's got a nasty habit of, you know, being vindictive. And it comes out in his speech everywhere. And his constituency, his fan base, the people who are fanatical in his support are the same way. Go on Facebook and listen to them. Try to talk with them. They're horrible. You can't get a... The hostility directed at you from these people, and is mind boggling. And I really do believe they get it from him.
Okay, well, thank you. So we have a vote from Jim in Florence, South Carolina, a vote in November of 2016 for President Trump, a vote in what, the very end of August 2018 against the tone that the president's setting and, you know, question, you know, plea for civility. Bree Payton of The Federalist, you know, a lot of what the president does at times, and certainly even elements of what you said, sounded a lot like saying, look, this is good substantively, but it's also good to be, you know, the word of the moment is trolling, right? It's good to sort of jerk around the media a little bit, make them feel a little rile them up a little bit and stick it to people who may have felt complacent for a while. You know, why is it necessary in order to accomplish the president's goals to do so in a way which seemingly expresses disdain for those with whom he might disagree?
Sure. So why do we need to own the libs, so to speak?
Sure. Right. That's another phrase of the moment, right?
Yeah, I guess just to respond to what some of the caller was, you know, asking about, you know, where I'm from and whether or not the Republic is still intact where I'm currently residing. So as a citizen of the United States, the Constitution is still the law of the land and the Supreme Court is still there to check against the presidency. And so is Congress, right? These are all three branches of government that actively work against and with one another in order to push and pull our way towards always acting in line with the Constitution. And we have seen that happen, right? The Supreme Court sided against Donald Trump when it came to the travel ban. Congress decided not to totally get rid of Obamacare. So these are ways that I think that the other branches of government are acting as a check against the presidency. And I think that that's healthy. And I hope that we continue to see kind of that robust push and pull from all three branches of government. Anyway, mm-hmm. in regards to your question about why it's necessary to own the libs, I think some of it is, okay, first of all, I don't think that it's necessary. Like, if I could control Donald Trump's behavior and was like queen of the world,
and I wish you every luck with that.
Yeah. I mean, he is his own man, and I'm not able to do that. But, you know, as someone who reluctantly, like, I held my nose and voted for him, and to be honest, I was very skeptical of his presidency. But, you know, I've been overwhelmingly and surprisingly very pleased with his tenure in office. If I could choose to turn off the tweets coming from him and turn off a lot of the incendiary rhetoric and just keep owning the libs in terms of policy and in terms of actions that he has taken. And I'm thinking specifically of like EPA rollback, right? And appointing Mick Mulvaney as in charge of the Consumer Financial Protection right. Bureau and Neil Gorsuch and all these other things. If I could keep all of that and get nix the tweets, I would 100% do that. But I do understand why a lot of people resonate with the tweets and with the rhetoric because for so long, you know, all the Republicans that ran for the presidency, that ran for office, they were kind of these milquetoast nice guys. And I think that it's definitely understandable to look at that and say, okay, this didn't really work for us. And the milquetoast nice guys that got elected into office that were Republicans, they don't challenge the norms. They don't challenge the status quos. They keep listening to their same donors. They keep doing the same things. They keep just kicking the can down the road.
So let's hear a little bit about what a non-milquetoast president does, in those words, about somebody who had been one of those Republican nominees. Here, Ashley Parker of The Washington Post was speaking on MSNBC Tuesday to talk about the president's reaction to the death of Senator John McCain. Parker said the president's behavior affected those who work with him.
It's also the people around him who sort of know what is called for in these times, especially General Kelly, but also even someone like, you know, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who was one of the people who came to the president before Senator McCain had passed with a statement and, you know, had to listen to the president sort of say, no, we're not going to call him a hero. We're not going to praise his life and his military service and his work. And I'm just simply going to send out a tweet.
So, Norm Ornstein, when you think about presidential leadership, often rhetoric and setting a tone is part of that. The president, struggled with the ability to express anything complimentary about the late Senator McCain this week. But also, there have been other instances in which one might expect, whether it's the hurricane in Puerto Rico or the events last summer in Charlottesville, to express things that represented the interests of the company as a whole, the country as a whole. How important is that to presidential leadership?
I believe it's a critical factor. I remember vividly, for example, when Ronald Reagan went to Normandy and gave that stirring speech. It represented the country. We've had other presidents who wrote eloquent things on the death of those who had been their adversaries. We expect presidents to show a kind of sensitivity and decorum to political opponents. That's part of what happens in a democracy, not to call for them being locked up and not to disdain them just because they don't like them. We do not expect presidents, when you have violent riots, to say there are very fine people on both sides, to basically condone a kind of divisive and racist behavior. Those are norms that have been pretty well established that have nothing to do with owning libs or owning conservatives. They have to do with fundamental decency. And if a president doesn't demonstrate it, then others come to believe that they can behave in that fashion as well. And we've seen instance after instance of behavior out in the country by people who think they've been unleashed from political correctness. That's certainly an important part of this. I do want to also, David, address some of the things that Bree said. Mm-hmm. One of our norms has been that we rely on facts and science to make policy. When you say it's wonderful that we're not relying on experts anymore, I would take issue with that as a good way to govern in a democracy. At the same time, when you put people in charge of agencies like the EPA and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, who then decide that they're going to protect banks and payday lenders against people who've been victimized, as we saw with millions with Wells Fargo Bank and the payday lending business, which has been corrupt. When you have people from industries put in charge of regulating those industries with toxic waste, for example, that may own the libs. I would not view it as something that's particularly good, and that has little to do with whether you're liberal or conservative. It has to do with crony capitalism.
Norman Eisen, how do you distinguish between somebody being conservative and taking over and getting to appoint people? One of our listeners, I will say, wrote in to say he thought that it was particularly stark given that Trump had not won the popular vote, that he was behaving in such a rhetorically strong as well as policy strong fashion on many fronts. But why, Norman Eisen, is it how do you distinguish between actions which are violating norms and in the way that Norm Ornstein just suggested, and simply, you know, putting in place a conservative agenda that you may or may not agree with, which, you know, is certainly his right?
Well, David, I was part of an insurgency in the Democratic Party on the part of President Obama, who came in to do reform and did do reform in a number of dramatic ways, some of which President Trump picked up on. For example, he continued in a watered down and deficient way, but he did continue the executive order limiting excessive lobbying abuses that I helped President Obama draft. Mm-hmm. The problem is I respect those legitimate policy decisions, and having worked in government, I know there are occasions when government bureaucracy can overreach, and we could have a debate. I'm of the more liberal persuasion. I believe we need government to protect us. That's what we learned from the financial crisis, from the pollution of the environment, from the suffering that people have when they don't have decent health care. However, I think you could have a debate about that, and I could be wrong. The place where I part company with Bree is in minimizing this complex of aberrant behavior by a president who, after all, is a named criminal subject in an investigation of his obstruction of justice. He's slipped from ethical violations to legal violations to possibly criminal ones. And in listening to Bree, I couldn't help but think you were kind enough to mention my book, The Last Palace. It's a story of the trajectory of democracy over the past 100 years. And I'm not comparing Trump to Hitler. I want to be very clear about that.
Well, let's not do that today, all right,
Norm? I'm not doing that, but he is a very serious threat. And I couldn't help but think of those who greeted don't take offense, please, Bree, but those who greeted the other tyrants, or I should say other tyrants of the past 100 years, whether they were of the left, like Lenin and Stalin, or of the right, like Hitler, not saying Trump is Hitler.
Well, let's...
By the good, making those same claims about the evil that needed to be swept away and the change that need to happen.
All right, so let's give Bree the last 10 seconds to respond to that. Are these norms of such high pitch, Bree? Very briefly. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Just to push back, I mean, my family fled Argentina in the aftermath of the Perón regime. So when Donald Trump initially started to run for office, I was skeptical of a lot of the authoritarian rhetoric that he employed. But since he's been in office, he hasn't been using his power to consolidate and become more powerful. He's been using it to smash the administrative state and, you know, roll back a lot of the powers of the executive.
And you're embracing the sledgehammer. I appreciate you all. Bree Payton, a staff writer at The Federalist, thank you so much for joining us. Also, we say thank you to our two Norms, Norm Ornstein and Norm Eisen. We've been talking to you here at On Point about norms being shattered. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.